Demons are always busy creating disturbances and killing. But the child lying on the bed of the house of Nanda Maharaj is meant to kill many demons. Lord Sri Krishna, the all-pervading super soul lying on the bed, understood that Putana, a witch who was expert in killing small children, had come to kill him. Therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. Thus, Putana took upon her lap him who was to be her own annihilation. Just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake to be a rope, purport by his divine grace, a Srimad-Bhagavatam Swami. In this verse, there are two perplexities. When Krishna saw that Putana had come to kill him, he thought that this woman was present with motherly affection. Although artificial, he had to offer her a benediction. Therefore, he looked at her with a little perplexity and then closed his eyes again. Putana Rakshasi also was perplexed. She was not intelligent enough to understand that she was taking a sleeping snake on her lap. She thought the snake to be an ordinary rope. The two words, antakam and anantam, are contradictory. Because of not being intelligent, Putana thought that she could kill her antakam, the source of her annihilation. But because he is ananta, unlimited, no one can kill him. Om Abhyantimidandasya Ananta-nakshara-kaya Chakshurum-militam-jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Tadamayam Tadakishva Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudha Padamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa
Killing of the demon Putana.
next 7 and 8. Very grateful to be all of you today. Festivals are contradictory, like the Prabhupada story. They energize us and they exhaust us simultaneously. In this chapter, Putana, who's a murderer, her joy, her mission was to kill children, eat their flesh, drink their blood. And Kamsa, he was fully dovetailed with the propensities. She came before Krishna. By her mystic powers, she disguised herself to be so beautiful. And she looked so kind and loving. She came to Nanda Maharaj's home. All the family members felt she had come to bless the child. Krishna was more dear to them than their very lives. The little baby took birth. At this time, he was only 1 or 2 days old. He absolutely attracted their hearts. They had no other object of love except this baby. In this way, Krishna, like a magnet, was attracting the total affection of all the residents of Vrindavan. But here is this person who they never met before. They didn't know who she was. And they allowed her to just walk right into the maternity ward of Nanda's estate. And we read here how she's looking at Krishna. And there's a contradiction because she's thinking something's telling her within that this child is going to be the cause of my destruction. He's not ordinary. She's a very powerful Rakshasi. And here's a newborn infant child. Some of you have seen a child when they're just a couple days old. Their fingers are like so tiny and so like little twigs. They look so absolutely fragile and vulnerable. Completely dependent for their survival on other people. These little infant babies are the personification of helplessness. And Krishna even looked more like that because he wanted to attract the parental affection. The residents of Vrindavan were thinking that he's completely depending on us for his survival. And here is Putana. She's a very powerful, gigantic person who had perfected the mystic siddhis. And she's looking at this infant and thinking, he is the cause of my destruction. Somehow or other, the Paramatma was giving her that wisdom. But still, because of her false ego, she was under the illusion, I will kill him. Meanwhile, Krishna himself, as revealed by Shukadeva Goswami, was in two minds. On one hand, she came in the guise of a mother, and she was a very beautiful lady. And at the same time, she came to kill him. So Krishna wanted to bless her. Ultimately, Krishna sees the good. He also sees everything else. And in Krishna consciousness, it's the art of removing everything else so only the good remains. In one sense, that's the way Srila Prabhupada began our whole movement. Putana had poison smeared upon her breast with the intention of giving it to Krishna to murder him. Yes. But Krishna was saying that she is coming as a mother. And actually, behind all that false ego of her plot to kill him, there was a trace of motherly affection for him. And Krishna witnessed that. He saw that. In the Bowery in 22nd Avenue in London, when Prabhupada was beginning this movement, people were coming. They didn't know anything about pure devotional service. There were people addicted to illicit sex, addicted to eating meat, addicted to intoxication and gambling their lives away. People full of selfishness and ego. They were coming. Srila Prabhupada could have just, "You're all demons, out from here." But he was just looking for any little trace of good. He saw the potential in everyone's heart to love Krishna. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabulai Skavanadi Sudhichiti Kodi Yamitoi. That love for Krishna is within the heart of everyone. It is our potential. It is covered by layers and layers and layers of anarchists or materialistic desires and ego. But Srila Prabhupada saw that potential in every living being. And no matter what a person was addicted to and whatever bad habits, if he saw that a person had the slightest inclination to chant the names of God, or hear something about Krishna, or appreciate something about devotional service, Prabhupada would just focus on that. He would fan that spark. He would encourage that person in such a way. And by fanning that spark, it became a blazing fire and burned to ashes all the others. Unwanted ones. Similarly, Krishna saw the good in her. But somehow or other, he had to get rid of the bad. So he allowed himself to be taken in the arms of Putana. And as she looked at her, she actually was very attracted. She was really confused. And then she stuck in his mouth a breast that was covered with deadly poison, powerful poison. Krishna sucked. It's so gigantic, like a huge mountain. And Krishna didn't grow. Can you imagine? She was about 8 miles high. And Krishna's just a little two-day baby. And she was trying to take him off with all of her mighty strength. She was trying to take him off, and he was just holding on. And with his little tiny fingers, we were describing those fingers, he was squeezing her. It was so painful. She was screaming in agony. "Child, leave me! Child, leave me!" And she was doing everything to somehow or other separate him. But he kept squeezing with his little tiny feet. He was kicking her. Now, if you see it from a perspective of size, she's gigantic, and he's like practically like a mosquito on her. Not even that. And he's just going, he's kicking with those little tiny feet that were softer than the softest lotus petal, and sucking. And ultimately she was screaming and screaming, and he sucked out her girl. And when she fell down, created earthquakes. She destroyed forests, covered massive pasture ground. When Uddhava was remembering Krishna in separation, he was expressing, who else can I take shelter of than Krishna? Even though this Putana came for the purpose of killing him, when he was in the helpless condition of a little baby, somehow or other, because she had that motherly affection, Krishna on that very day sent her to the spiritual world to have an eternal relationship with him as a nurse, as a mother. Krishna gave her the highest liberation. Through that pain, she suffered. She had to suffer. But through that pain of concentrated suffering, Krishna removed all of her sins, all of her anartas, everything. And all that remained was her motherly affection. So at the time of death, she loved Krishna. Sometimes to eradicate whatever sins we have seen among devotees, wonderful devotees, sometimes they have to go through great hardships. Sometimes they even die and it's a painful situation, you know, beforehand. But for sincere devotees, everything's a blessing. What may have taken hundreds of lifetimes of devotional service according to their capacity to serve, to remove their anartas, brought by mercy and Krishna's love. Just some concentrated dose, it's all gone, and all that's left is our love and our devotion, our gratitude. And we go back home, back to God. Speaking on the subject of punishment, yesterday was Odinashasti, the day that Radha Mata Nishwar appeared in London by Srila Prabhupada's grace. It's the installation day, one of the greatest, most historical moments in Gaudiya Vaishnava history. Recently, a great treasure came into the hands of Prabhupada Society. An entire library of Gaudiya Vaishnav books and archives were given to the devotees in Calcutta. A couple thousand manuscripts. Some were the original manuscripts from the time of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Very well may be his originals. Diaries of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I was looking through some of them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the original paper and pen where he was writing many of his songs. I saw Gaur Arti. And you know it's original because it's not a Xerox or anything like that. This is from long ago. It's from a notebook that has holes in it from worms eating it away or white ants, whatever. And still in quite good condition. Very, very old pads of paper. About 100, almost 100 years old. And there was the first... I'll explain briefly. Very exciting. At the top of the page is Dakshine Nitai Chan Bane Gadatara. Like that. And then it goes down verse by verse, one line at a time. But we can understand that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kipa Jayo Jayagora Chandru, he thought of that later. Because in very, very tiny, small letters on the very top of the page, he cramped it above the first verse. And Narahari Adhikari, that verse, between two other verses that he had already written, he draws a line and with a little arrow, and then this verse, Narahari, is vertical in the margin, it's written vertical so we could fit it in. So it was definitely an original transcript. And there was the Radha Krishna Arti. And Nadia Kodrumi Nityananda Mahajan. After dozens and dozens of their songs. The original book that he was writing, the songs of Shyamakati Gitari. Then there was a diary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Really old book. Old British style. It's about this big. And he would just write notes in it. Incredible the kind of notes that he would just write to remember things or ideas and thoughts that he wanted to cultivate in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. And at one place, a devotee had written down one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's secretaries was writing down everything that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would say. He didn't have tape recorders in those days. He usually had 1 to 3 people just around him taking notes and writing down whatever he would say. And there were his instructions to the sannyasis that he had sent to London. And he was really grateful for these devotees who had gone to London. He was saying that we should consider ourselves very small, and the people of Britain, we should consider themselves very respectable personalities, and with straw between our teeth, we should present to them Krishna consciousness. His techniques of preaching are very powerful. And then he was expressing his heart's joy that devotees were preaching Mahaprabhu's mission in London. How do you pronounce the river here? Thames. Okay. He writes, what a historical event this is. How pleased Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all the acharyas will be that the glorious teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are now being manifested. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the glorious teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are now being manifested on the holy banks of the River Thames. That's what he wrote. So how Prabhupada's Gurudev wanted Krishna consciousness to be spread in life. And you can imagine Srila Prabhupada's joy on Ogana Shastri, which we celebrated yesterday. And on behalf of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada was installing beautiful marble deities of Radha Mandaneshwara in downtown London, just a block or so away from the British Museum. I think it was Kripa Mayapur who at that event explained how the British were taking all kinds of statues from India and putting them in the British Museum. But Prabhupada had Radha and Krishna outside the British Museum, just outside, to be worshipped and honored and attract people's hearts. What a glorious day. People imagine when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed Prabhupada to go to the West and teach this message. And Prabhupada cultivated that desire from 1922 to 1965. He was constantly cultivating that desire. And on Friday the 13th of August, 1965, he boarded Jalatuta, the King George Dockyards in Calcutta. A couple days before that, he went to Mayapur town, and he spent the day at the Samadhi of Shiva Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, begging for his mercy, praying for his blessing. Because it was an impossible task. 70-year-old man with no money, knowing no one, going on a cargo ship. 38 days on a cargo ship. And right at the beginning, while he was in the Arabian Sea, he had several heart attacks, severe seasickness. It was carried on. And he wrote in his diary, how he was feeling such deep separation from Vrindavan. I am so far from my home in Vrindavan, and my worshipable lords, Sri Govinda, Gopinath, and Radha Damodar. But I am coming on the order of my spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, for the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And Prabhupada said, completely depending on their grace. To execute their desire. And then he ended feeling so far from Vrindavan. So of course Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his focus was always London. Prabhupada went to New York because he felt that that was the most powerful place of influence in the world, in the West. But then he sent those six devotees here to London. And when Prabhupada came about a year later, they were famous. They had a temple. Crowds of people were taking interest. And Srila Prabhupada installed his deities. Now I'd like to say something about Kodana Shastri, because it's the story of transcendental punishment. Do you all know the story?
No.
It's the very last chapter of Chaitanya Bhagavad. And when somebody is writing or speaking, oftentimes a very important message is saved for the end. So this is the very end of one of the most important books ever written. It's the story of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. He came to Puri to meet with Lord Chaitanya and the devotees. And on this particular day of Odanashasti, Lord Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra in Puri are given brand new clothes, outfit after outfit after outfit, all the way up until Makara Sankranti, a couple months. And they were giving, but this particular day was a very big festival. And the whole town of Puri was excited. There's decorations everywhere. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his devotees very early in the morning went into the temple. They were offering Jagannath beautiful silk clothes, wonderful jewels and ornaments, incense and lamps and scents. Bells were blowing, instruments were playing, constant Brahmins chanting prayers, kirtans, flower garland after flower garland, all sorts of other types of floral decorations. It was constant offerings. And there were hundreds and hundreds of preparations of bhoga, or food, constantly coming in and out of the altar. And Lord Chaitanya's devotees, the whole day, from morning till late night, just seeing the Lord being offered such love by his devotees, such wonderful things, is the satisfaction for a Vaishnava. Enjoying ourselves may give some sense of happiness. But when there is love, our greatest happiness is seeing the enjoyment of the object of our love. Vrindavan Das Thakur explains the great miracle of this episode. Because the Lord, who is in the form of a devotee, is having darshan and worshipping himself in the form of the deity. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahiranya. At the end of the festival, Swarup Damodar Goswami and Pundarik Vidyanidhi were coming home. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi said, what they were doing in the temple today was very bad. They were offering Jagannath new clothes with unwashed, starched garments. According to the rules and regulations of the scriptures, unstarched garments are considered, starched garments are considered contaminated. And they were offering unstarched garments. You have to wash them. Even in an ordinary setting, according to scripture, if you touch a starched, unwashed garment, you have to wash your hands, otherwise you're contaminated. And they're offering it one after another, contaminated starched clothing to Jagannath, to the deity of the Lord. Why are they doing this? They know the scriptures. Everybody knows this. So Damodar Goswami replied that these scriptures, the rules and regulations, ultimately for the purpose of awakening love. These pujaris, if Jagannath is accepting them, if the king of Puri is not stopping it, it must be Jagannath's desire. If they're offering with love, what is the problem? After all, Jagannath is not contaminated or not contaminated. He's above all these things. Pundarik Vidyanidhi said, the Lord may be above all these things, but that doesn't mean we're above all these things. It's not right. As they were talking, they were laughing the whole time. Then they parted and went to sleep. That night, when Pundarik Vidyanidhi was sleeping, he happened to see Lord Jagannath and Lord Balaram marching toward him. Their eyes were red with anger. They walked right up to him and started beating him in the cheeks, slapping him very hard. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi was shocked. He fell down at their feet and said, "Lord, Lord, please, please, what offense did I do to deserve this? Please forgive me." And Lord Jagannath said, "You deserve so much worse." He said, "You criticize my devotees. They were making offerings of love to me, and I was happy, and you were considering all these mundane scriptural injunctions, and you were criticizing them. Why have you come here? You've come here to criticize my devotees? If you're going to do this, get out from here. This is my holy abode. Out from here." And kept slapping him. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was saying, "I realize I have made a great offense. Please, please forgive me." And Jagannath said, "Because you are a devotee, I will forgive you. But never do this again. Because of my love for you, I have punished you to correct you from your misconception." And then Pundarik Vidyanidhi was thinking that actually I deserve much worse, but the Lord is so compassionate, he came to rectify my wrong mentality. Then he woke up. When he woke up, his cheeks were puffed up and red with bruises on them. Every morning, Swarup Damodar Goswami and Pundarik Vidyanidhi would go meet at the temple of Jagannath very early, but that morning Pundarik Vidyanidhi didn't come. So Swarup Damodar Goswami asked him, you know, he came back and said, "Why didn't you come? Why you're so late?" And Pundarik Vidyanidhi turned his face and he said, "What happened to you? Cheeks are all swollen and bruised. What happened to you?" Pundarik Vidyanidhi told him the story. He was saying, "How fortunate I am that the Supreme Lord punished me out of His supreme compassion." So in this way, Swarup Damodar Goswami was thinking, no one is more fortunate than me. The moral to this story is how the Lord, out of compassion, will sometimes punish his devotee, or sometimes even make his devotee suffer, but there's always a lesson to be learned. That one who goes through difficult periods with folded hands, grateful, "I deserve worse," and with a grateful heart turns to God and takes shelter, that person alone, the supreme liberation is his rightful inheritance. Another very important message of the story of Odhana Shasti is we should not fall prey to seeing things according to our external conceptions and appearances, especially devotees of the Lord. Vaishnavera kriya mudra vikyena pujaya. In the Bible, Lord Jesus said about the Pharisees that you have an understanding of the letter of the law, but you do not understand the spirit and the power behind it. This is a reason for so much criticism among people of the same faith, a reason for criticism among people of different faiths, that we see the external appearances. And we also see the particular rituals. Rituals may be different. Explanations may be different. Traditions may be different altogether. But what is the essence? What is the purpose? Unless we see all the rituals, all the teachings in perspective and in harmony with the essence of what it's bringing us to, then all sorts of criticism and sectarianism is inevitable. Vai pung sang paro dharma yato bhaktir bhakshu jay ahoit ki apriti hata yagatma supersedity. The supreme dharma, the supreme religion, the supreme occupation for all humanity is that which awakens the dormant love of God that is within our hearts. That love must be unconditional and unmotivated to completely satisfy the self. First commandment is to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. In Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharman paritya cha mam ekam sharanam vraj. Abandon all varieties of dharma, just surrender to me. Where we find that love manifesting, and what are the symptoms of one who loves God? Humility, compassion, self-control. Intoxication and absorption in one's object of love, God. There is a verse in the Bhagavad that all the rules, I will agree with you. All the rules and all the regulations of all the scriptures and all the world are all ultimately meant to bring us to the point of following two rules. To always remember Krishna, to never forget Krishna. To be absorbed of instruments of Krishna's love. Unless we focus on the goal and see the purpose of everything we're doing, we get completely caught up in the various methods without understanding its purpose. All tradition, all ritual, all rules and regulations on the spiritual path, they're like envelopes. The envelope is meant to carry a message to God. In our tradition, the guru is the mailman. He's Prabhupada said, I am the post. The guru is like the postman that delivers our message to God. Now, the envelope may be fantastic. Oftentimes it has the wrong address. But even if it has the right address, the important thing about the envelope is the message inside. The envelope is just to carry the message. The message is our intent, our purpose. Srila Prabhupada wrote that Krishna does not see what you offer him. Krishna sees the purpose and the intent of everything that is offered. And Krishna accepts the intent, the purpose. Our intent is the message. The particular form or ritual we may be offering it, whether it's offering of food, whether it's prayer, whether it's so many other types of rituals are there, traditions. That's meant to carry the message of our intent to love and to serve unconditionally. And when we see that essence within ourselves, we can see that essence in others too. Well, this Lila Pundarik Vidyanidhi, of course he was a Paramahamsa, great sage, but this pastime, if he wasn't, and a completely pure, the rest of us, if we make this mistake of just seeing the external form without understanding the essence within it, we usually become envious, or we become judgmental. But for Pundarik Vidyanidhi, God appeared to him in a dream and beat him up in love. That was how exalted he was. But there's a verse, or Prabhupada quoted a Bengali saying, that when the mother wants to teach the daughter-in-law, she does it by instructing the daughter. Now, in India, there's joint families. Because the daughter-in-law is new to the family. If the mother chastises her to correct her, she could become very much disturbed in mind. So the mother will chastise the daughter, because for her it's not a problem, she's used to it. And the daughter-in-law will hear all the good lessons and learn. So similarly, when Krishna wants to teach, he teaches through his most dedicated, loving devotees. Through the devotees, he teaches the world. Prahlad, he didn't have to go through all that difficulty. But Krishna wanted to teach the highest standards of devotion to the world through Prahlad. Prabhupada didn't have to get heart attacks and strokes and all of that other poverty, living in the ghetto of the Bali. Krishna could have sent him a first-class ticket on Air India. But wanted to teach the world through his devotion, the highest principles of humility and devotion. Prabhupada was praying, just let me be your puppet, my Lord. Let me just be your puppet and dance as you want me to dance. Well, this tendency to find faults with others. And here the faults are based on scripture. Even this the Lord would not tolerate, because he was not seeing the essence. These pujaris had just simple, basic devotion. Even though they were making mistakes, and the Lord accepted them. And finding fault in their mistakes, the Lord was furious about. He didn't mind their mistakes, but he minded the people who were finding faults with their mistakes. Amani namanatara. Therefore, the principle to offer respects to others and not expect respect for ourselves is the safe path. Well, this is a very important message. And this is the message of Odana Shastri, especially in regard to deity worship. And Prabhupada installed the deities on that day. And the devotees in London were definitely making a lot of mistakes. So it was very appropriate that Prabhupada installed the deities on this day. As far as the scriptural codes of deity worship, they were making a lot of mistakes, but Prabhupada was just encouraging them, just understand the essence. We saw that Guru Das Prabhu and Yamuna Devi Prabhu and Malatik and Shamsundar and Mukunda and Janaki, they were not trained in all the intensely elaborate rules and regulations of deity worship. But they were sincere. And they had a very, very pure, pure purpose, pure motive. And therefore, Prabhupada, by his grace, he called the deity to come and accept their service. Prabhupada was looking at the essence, and he understood the Lord will be pleased, even despite all the unlimited mistakes they will make by scriptural standards, because their intent was good. And it's this principle of seeing the essence, encouraging the essence, that was the very basis of Prabhupada's compassion upon us, and the very foundation of the installation of Radha Vandaneeshwar here in London. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, Om Premanandu. Guru Das Prabhu, would you like to say a few words before we depart?
Just about to go to the airport, but all glories to Prabhupada, all glories to the assembled devotees.